He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Nice. You were still ready for it. As I said, as I was saying at the outset, really one Sunday is not enough to celebrate Easter. We need to continue in that, and that is a world-transforming, life-changing, historical event. And the whole of our lives can be and should be, and this is God's gracious invitation to us, can be wrapped around that. And that's really the invitation from God. Just a few days ago, we celebrated Anderson, my son, his 10-year-old birthday. And one of the things I love about our family, and Heather, my wife, is the mastermind behind all of this, is that birthdays are wonderful. She does them really well. So birthday morning, there's homemade donuts. Yeah, they're good. And the night before, we call that birthday eve, so we have a special meal on that night. And really the whole week, a day is not enough. We take the whole week to celebrate. And often there are streamers in our house, you know, that crepe paper that you kind of twist and loop back and forth. And often, there wasn't this time, but often that's what happens. And then it just sticks around for days. I don't know if that just says something about kind of our habits of ordering our house, but I think part of it is that we want to linger in the joy of that event. And these crepe paper, these streamers, they just start to sag and sag until eventually, as I'm walking through my family room, I kind of have to, you know, do the limbo. But we want to linger in that event. And that's what I'm hoping, that's what we do for birthdays, but that's what I'm hoping this church does with resurrection, the raising of Jesus from the dead. I want us to linger, to stay in that event. And the way we're going to do that is through this series that I'm calling If, Investigating the Christian Faith. And it's a chance for us to do just that, to look at this thing called faith. And we started last week, and I defined faith as trust, and I'll continue in that same vein today. But to look at this thing, this concept, this way of life called faith, and truly to investigate it, to ask some of the hard questions, to let ourselves be okay with the uncertainties that we have, the doubt that we have, to let that hesitation be okay, and also to invite others into that. And I'm asking you to invite others to church, maybe particularly during this season. And that's why, again, in your bulletin, and can you find these, by the way? These were in your bulletin, and if they happen to fall out, there's some in the pew racks in front of you. So find these cards. These are invitation cards. And this is a way for you to invite others to church, because, again, we want to be open to people like ourselves who have uncertainties and questions and doubts about the Christian faith. So my invitation to you is simply this: take this card and pray for one person. And maybe God opens a door for you to invite that person to church. The way Jesus often invited people, his disciples, into this life of faith is he said, "Come and see." I love that, the joy and the grace of that invitation. And we can do that too. Come and see this great thing that God is doing in my life. So be praying for one person. And let me just boldly ask, how many of you would be willing to pray? If you're willing to pray for one person, just stick a hand in the air or stick this card in the air. And it's all right if a bit of peer pressure is going on right now. So all I'm asking you to do is to pray for one person and then see if God opens a door. And we're going to be doing that. We're going to be looking at all these passages in the Bible that begin with this word, this important, sincere word, if. And we're going to be asking questions about the Christian faith. And this morning, I want to just jump into that a bit more deeply and, in a sense, kind of introduce this series and lay a bit more of a foundation for it. And I'm going to do that with a passage of Scripture found in Mark chapter 9. And this is a profound story of Jesus healing a child. But at the center of the story is this question of faith and what really is faith. And then there's the very profound sentence in the middle of it that I'm going to unpack a little bit. And all of that, I'm hoping, will lead us to this central event of worship, which is celebrating the Lord's Supper. So let's take a look at Mark chapter 9, beginning in verse 14. This is the word of the Lord for us, sisters and brothers. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them, and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing with them about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him on the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive him out, but they could not." Now, you have to get yourself in the place of this father with this sick child. And some of you have been in that place before. Some of you are maybe in that place before or right now. This father is desperate for his son to be healed. And so he takes him to Jesus. And he makes this step of faith that Jesus would heal him. And really, faith is at the center of this passage. Verse 19, Jesus says this, "O unbelieving generation." And I'm not sure who he's pointing out there, but he's claiming a lack of faith, Jesus is, maybe in the disciples who were unable to heal this child, maybe in the crowd that's around. "O unbelieving generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," the father answered. "It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can," and here's that word if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. This is the cry of a father who loves his child and wants his child healed. "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for him who believes." Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe, help me overcome my unbelief." Or I think translated better, "I believe, help my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the evil spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "This kind can come out only by prayer." This is the word of the Lord. I do love this sentence, and it's just one sentence, but for really the whole of my life of faith, I have grabbed onto this statement of the father of this sick child. It's really a declaration of faith, or what we would call a confession of faith. The father says, "I believe, help my unbelief." Really quite brave, I think, of the father. Because again, Jesus has already made the focus of this entire event that's going on the question of faith. And Jesus has already said to the crowd, "Oh, unbelieving generation, how long shall I have to put up with you?" And then when the father asks him to heal his child, Jesus says, "If you can, anything is possible, everything is possible for him who believes." So Jesus has already put this focus on faith, and this father, I think quite boldly and with a great deal of bravery, says, "I believe, help my unbelief." I'd say it's brave because he doesn't say, "I believe, period." And that must have been, in a sense, a temptation for this father, because again, Jesus has already kind of thrown down the gauntlet of faith and said, "If you can, everything is possible if you have faith." So wouldn't it have been natural for the father just to claim, "Yes, I believe, period"? But he goes on and says, "Help my unbelief." He doesn't pretend that he, in a sense, has it all together, that his belief is perfect, that it's without doubt and uncertainty. "I believe, help my unbelief." I think it's precisely that declaration of faith, that statement of faith that's needed in our world today. We're living in what we should call, or what we could call at least, a post-Christian world. By that I mean there's no compulsion for people to do what all of you have done this morning, which is show up on a Sunday morning for worship. 20 years ago, that was not the case. There was still this cultural compulsion to come to church, to worship. the words of this book were at least known in a sense for most people. But that's not the case today, is it? The people driving by on College Avenue, they may not even know that this large building is a church, and if they do know, they just don't really care. It's not that they're against the church, they're just indifferent to the church and to faith. This is a post-Christian world, and it's in that world that this precise, I think, declaration of faith is needed. I believe, but not period. I believe, help my unbelief. As I've been driving back and forth from Boulder, where I live, to Fort Collins to come to work, I've been filling the time in various ways. Sports radio, I admit, a lot of the time. But also, there's a bunch of wonderful podcasts out there, and I listen to a great many of them. One I found recently, a friend recommended it to me. It's called The Liturgists Podcast. So a liturgist is what Bob is doing right now. He's our liturgist. He's reading the liturgy. The liturgy is the work of the people, and Bob's leading us in that. And so these two Christian leaders have named their podcast The Liturgists, and these two leaders who lead this podcast came out of a life of faith and both had what they call a deconversion. So they were Christians, and then for a period of time, they were not Christians. And these are both strong Christian leaders. One of them, his name is Michael Gungner. He is a Christian artist, helped start a fabulous church in Denver called Bloom. So Michael had an experience of deconversion, as did his co-host of this podcast, who goes by the name of Science Mike. Now, I don't know Mike's last name. I'm not sure anybody knows Mike's last name, but he calls himself Science Mike because he loves science, and he's very intelligent, and his deconversion of faith had a lot to do with that, with what he thought was this inability for faith and science to exist alongside of each other. And so he began to read many authors who call themselves the new atheists and started struggling with all these issues of creation and science and where does God fit into all of that. And his deconversion was so profound that eventually Mike said, I'm an atheist. And Science Mike had been a strong leader in his church. This was a Southern Baptist church, so he was called a deacon. It's what we would call an elder in our system. But he was a deacon, a leader in the church, what I would call a pillar in the church. He taught Sunday school, Science Mike did, to young people. And he had this deconversion of faith. He became an atheist, and as hard as that was for me to listen to, and by the way, if you're interested in this kind of thing, I would encourage you to listen to this podcast and go back to the episodes that called Lost and Found. That's where Science Mike and Michael Gungner tell their stories. But the hard thing for me in listening to these stories, especially of Science Mike, was not that he became an atheist, as hard as that is to hear, but that when that happened, he couldn't tell anyone about it. He was stuck, he said, in his faith. And mostly because he was a leader in the church. He was a deacon. He taught Sunday school. And in his faith was really important in his family. His wife was also a Christian. And they shared with their children the Bible and their belief in God. And so when Mike all of a sudden found he was an atheist, he couldn't share that with anyone. He just kept pretending that he believed because he was trapped. In fact, during that time, he led his youngest daughter to become a Christian. Yeah. Saying that prayer. And all the time he was pretending because he was stuck in his faith. And that, I think, is the tragic part. Really, I would say what Science Mike was lacking in his faith was a piece of punctuation. And I'm not sure you noticed it when we were looking at that sentence, I believe, help my unbelief. But if we can look at that sentence again, you see there's a semicolon there. And I think this is what Science Mike was lacking in his faith. This little beautiful, I was an English major, piece of punctuation. Not I believe, period, but I believe, semicolon, help my unbelief. That's the confession of faith our world needs, and that's maybe what Science Mike was missing. See, all those doubts, uncertainties, questions, I think those were all there for him, but he had this deconversion of faith, and all of a sudden they erupted, and he didn't know what to do with them because he'd always said, I believe, period. He didn't have that other sentence, help my unbelief. And so he had this deconversion, and he started to pray about it and wrestle and read and all the time talking to God about his doubts. And by the way, eventually he has a reconversion to faith. But I think it's only after this little piece of grammar happens for Science Mike, the semicolon. You know, a semicolon does something beautiful, and let me ask Marv and Cindy to come up here. You can help me out with this, you two. A semicolon can link two sentences together. So if the two of you can stand on either side of the semicolon, this time I prepared Marv and Cindy for this. So,
sort of.
Marv, I'm going to give you a sentence, so don't show that to everyone yet, but just read it and get familiar with it. So Marv and Cindy have two sentences, and they are independent clauses. They have a subject, a verb, they're a complete thought, so they can stand alone as a sentence, but they can also go together. So Marv, turn yours around, and if you can speak your sentence.
Jeff is so cool.
Good. I like the way you really owned that sentence, Marv. You really made it your own. Okay, Cindy, your sentence.
He's a great boss.
Now, these sentences, they just came to me, okay? That's what came out of my head, but I really appreciate the sincerity from you both. Now, these are sentences that can stand alone. So these are independent clauses. If we wanted, we could just say Marv's sentence. Go ahead again, Marv.
Jeff is so cool.
We could put a period there, and then we could put a capital H on Cindy's sentence.
He's a great boss.
So these two sentences could stand alone, but they really go together, don't they? And that's the beauty of the semicolon. These independent clauses are now linked, and there is one. So one more time with feeling.
Jeff is so cool.
He's a great boss.
All right. Thanks, you guys. You're awesome. So, the semicolon. Do you see its importance now? Linking these two independent clauses. Yes, they can stand alone, but also they belong together. And that's the case with this sentence in the Gospel of Mark from this father desperate for his child to be healed. And in the midst of this questioning of faith that Jesus himself has brought up, I believe, semicolon, help my unbelief. See, those two things actually belong together. Science Mike says this, the opposite of faith is not doubt, it's certainty. And I think that's true. If we were certain, there would be no need for faith. So really, the whole of this sentence, I believe, semicolon, help my unbelief, all of that, the whole linked together sentence, that is faith. And that is needed, I think, in our world. I don't know what stands for you on this side of the sentence this morning. By that, I mean, I don't know where your uncertainties lie, where your doubts lie, your skepticism, your questioning. I imagine for most of you, it's there. That your statement of faith would not be, I believe, period, but it would have this little piece of punctuation and then that next phrase, help my unbelief. And again, I don't know where your unbelief lies, your lack of trust, because that's what belief is, where your questions are, your uncertainties, but I bet they're there. And the gracious invitation from Jesus is to invite you deeper into that. See, that's what Science Mike did. He wrestled with all those questions, and he wrestled with God. Israel, the people of God, that name Israel means those who strive or struggle with God. I love that name and that image. And that's what Science Mike did. He wrestled, he asked those questions, but not apart from a conversation with God. So whatever your uncertainties are, I would say, talk to God about it. Pray, converse with God about this side of your faith. My uncertainties right now actually have to do with my calling and career and job. As all of you know, I'm the temporary pastor at this church. I'm called the Bridge Senior Pastor. I've had a 3-month contract. And by the way, Session just renewed me for another 3 months, so you get me for a bit more time. Thanks. That's simply because the PNC, our pastoral nominating committee, is making progress, and please keep them in prayer, but they're not quite ready to have someone ready for you at the beginning of May, so my contract is ongoing, so another 3 months. But of course, the question for me, and this is my side of this statement, the question is, God, what next for me? And I'm wrestling with that. I'm troubled by that. And I've been troubled by that question for actually a number of years now, because I've been in this uncertain place for a while about what is my long-term call in ministry. And I try and have faith. I try and trust. I say I believe, and I mean it. But there's this other side of it where I say, God, I don't really believe. I don't really trust. I want to know exactly where you want me to be and who you want me to serve, and I want it all answered. And so I, too, have unbelief, and I'm wrestling with it. And in the midst of that wrestling, I'm talking to God. I'm praying. You see, I think the mistake would be to think when we talk to God, we have to be in this place of faith and trust. I believe, period. But God's okay with this side of the sentence, with the doubts, the mistrust, the uncertainty. And whatever that is for you this morning, allow God to be a part of that. Even if you've never allowed God to be a part of all of those uncertainties before, if you've never had a life of faith, know that you can actually start here with that lack of faith, with those doubts, and talk to the God who made you about your questions. This is the invitation of the life of faith, and this is where God has me. I've recently been reading a book by a pastor named Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was a pastor in World War II Germany, incredible man of faith, and was imprisoned for his part in a plot to get rid of Hitler. And while he was in prison, he wrote a great many things, but this passage about faith really struck me. He's writing to his friend Eberhard. I discovered later, Bonhoeffer said, that I'm still discovering right up to this moment that is only by living completely in this world that one learns to have faith. One must completely abandon any attempt to make something of oneself, whether it be a saint or a converted sinner or a churchman, the so-called priestly type, a righteous man or an unrighteous man, a sick man or a healthy one. By this worldliness, I mean living unreservedly in life's duties, problems, successes and failures, experiences and perplexities. In so doing, we throw ourselves completely into the arms of God, taking seriously not our own sufferings, but those of God in the world, watching with Christ in Gethsemane. That, I think, is faith. That's where I am, at least, with faith. And I do want my faith to be this worldly, according to what Bonhoeffer is here saying. Not the life that I want, but the life that I have lived before God. And a guiding declaration and confession for me in that is, I believe, help my unbelief. Let that be our prayer. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, we are your children in your world. And God, we do want to live our life of faith in this world unreservedly with whatever you put before us. God, this phrase from this father who loved his child captures our hearts. And we say it now to you in prayer and in worship. I believe. Help my unbelief. This is our prayer in your name. Amen.